From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Cabot Creamery, one of several socially active food cooperatives. Details are at go.coop. That's go.coop.
Mama, in my kitchen, there's hard to be raining out the door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. How you doing on this gorgeous fall night? It's at Calabash today. First time I've actually been in the country and able to go. It's really, I knew it was wonderful, or it would be wonderful. I've heard so much about it over the years, and it was every bit as wonderful as I thought. And I was a high bidder on a gourd, so that makes it even better. And a couple nights ago, I think it was probably Thursday night, I was at Cafe St. Rose, a little place on Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa. And if you don't know, Mark Maliki has expanded so that he suddenly went from 14 seats to 28, I think. And starting on, I think it's October 9th, he is going to be having a pig dinner, a pork dinner, if you will, every Tuesday night. And he went into the walk-in and came out with the piglets that he will be serving on the first dinner. And they are from Clark Summit Farm, and actually holding a couple of pictures of these absolutely adorable little pigs. And I have Dan Bagley here in the studio with me. Welcome to Mouthful.
Hello.
And I have to say, thank you. You've come on really short notice. I rounded you up at the farmer's market today, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I like to educate people on how we raise our animals.
Now, you've come to my attention just, maybe in the last 2 or 3 months since you've been at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. But how long have you been farming? And you're there right on, on the bound of the county line between Sonoma and Marin, right?
Yes. We're about a mile in on the Marin side of the border. And we're about 2 miles from the ocean as the crow flies.
Uh-huh.
So we have a lot of coastal fogs, and it makes for delicious animals.
Now, are you fairly near the Coast Guard station?
No, we're actually in between Valley Ford and Tamales. We're right on Highway 1. We're closer.
Oh, okay. Okay, now I know exactly
really
where you are.
Really close to the borderline.
Right.
The Stero Americana is what separates the Marin County from Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm. How many acres do you have?
We have 160 acres. It's my wife's family farm. She's the third generation, and her kids are the fourth. They bought the property in 1916 when her grandfather had a good potato year. So you imagine buying a farm, buy a potato crop.
Because you had a good potato year.
Yeah.
I don't even think you can buy a farm with a good grape year anymore.
But what we're trying to be is sustainable and raise animals the way her grandfather did back in the 30s.
And when did you guys start doing it?
We started doing it about 6 years ago. We both had full-time jobs, and then my wife would come home and collect our eggs at her lunch break. And we started marketing our eggs, and customers loved our eggs and the way they tasted. So eventually we decided to have her quit work and just be a full-time farmer at home, and because that's what her passion is. And then I still worked full-time for a high school, and 6 years later, I decided to take a leave of absence.
Oh, really?
And try making the farm work totally sustainable.
Uh-huh. And what high school?
I worked at Tomales High School. Uh-huh. And I do some maintenance for the school district.
Uh-huh. And so now, for at least for a while, you're both farming full-time.
Right now, we're both farming full-time.
Uh-huh. And are free-range eggs your primary product, or just maybe the most visible at the farmer's market?
Well, we started off doing organic. All our land is certified organic through Marin County,
mm-hmm.
through Moca. And then we've always, it used to be a dairy, and then a lot of the dairies have gone under, and we decided to try, you know, everyone raise conventional beef, but you can't live on just one species of animals because it's seasonal.
Sure.
So we started raising chickens, and then we still weren't being sustainable. So we decided, wintertime, hey, let's raise some pigs so we can have something to sell all year long. So then we started raising hogs, and we get whey from Calgary Creamery, and we feed them organic grain, the same grain that we feed our chickens. And then we had to work on our species of animals, because most hogs around here are all like 4-H pigs that are really lean, and they're used to eating grain, and they're not used to eating grasses. So we had to research and do a lot of studying, and we found an old Gloucester spot, which is an English pig, and it used to be used for gleaning.
Now, is this the one? I have a picture here, and
yes.
It's pink with black random spots. Is that a Gloucester spot?
Yeah, that's a Duroc old Gloucester spot.
And it's hard to tell in perspective in this photograph. I'm going to guess. No, I'm not even going to guess. How old is this pig?
That pig is 3 weeks old.
3 weeks old. So it weighs about how much at that age?
It weighs about 10 to 12 pounds.
Okay. So it's still a piglet.
It's a piglet.
Okay.
And pigs grow very fast. They usually take like 6 months from birth to weigh about 230 pounds, which is...
6 months is all?
6 months.
Wow.
Yes. And most of our Duroc crosses have 10 babies, 10 to 8 babies on the average.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our babies are born on pasture. I built these little A-frame huts, and I hook them up to my quad, and they have a cable on them, and we drag them around our fields. And since we're organic, we can't spray any pesticides or anything. Mm-hmm. So we use our pigs to eat our thistles and other pigweed, other weeds that we have,
mm-hmm.
Because they're such good foragers, and it's really helped on our quality of grasses. Mm-hmm. As we moved them around, we concentrate them in certain areas, and then we get beautiful ryegrass growing back, and then the cows love the ryegrass, and they come and eat the ryegrass, and then we put the chickens behind the cows, and they spread the cow manure, and they also have manure themselves, so our land becomes nutritionally rich.
Mm-hmm. Rich and balanced.
And balanced.
Uh-huh. So the products that you sell, you have eggs, you have chickens, you have pork.
And beef.
And beef. Okay, I didn't realize you also had beef. Yeah. And I notice you have the product list. You sell ham, smoked shanks, trotters, but you also sell skin, pork skin.
Yeah.
And that's something that people should pay attention to, because there's a dish popular in many different parts of Italy, and it's called alternately Goudini or Codini, and it's stuffed pigskin. And the one time that I bought the pigskin to make it, I had to buy either a 30 or 40 pound box of pigskin, and I still have packages of it in my freezer.
Wow.
So if you can get pigskin, especially from somebody who's growing organically, that's really great to know.
Yes.
So I'm going to spread this information far and wide, Dan.
Good. We need, you know, we don't advertise at all. Everything's pretty much word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it primarily farmers markets and also direct to restaurants, right?
Yes, direct to restaurants. We only have a couple of restaurants that we supply stuff to. Because when you go and get stuff USDA, you have to drive all the way up by Chico to Orleans to get it USDA. Then it goes all the way back down here, so...
Now, why is that? What is it about the way USDA is set up that the closest service for someone in the Bay Area is Chico? How does that work?
Well, there's a place in also by Stockton, Merced, that does hogs. And I've tried them, and they have a hard time. Most slaughterhouses don't realize what we're doing is a very special thing. We're raising our pigs totally organically. And what they want to do is just say, okay, bring your hogs in. We'll do your hogs, and we'll give you these other hogs because they're ready,
right.
You know, because they have a huge turnaround. And we're like, no. We don't want anybody else's hogs. We want our hogs, and we want all of our organ meats and things because we have customers that have, like, cancer, and they need the extra iron that's in the organ meats to help replenish their bloodstream, which is adds good iron to back to their blood. And so it's really hard to find a place that will work with you.
So by place, we're talking about a slaughterhouse that is small enough that they'll work with individual farmers like you.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. So Chico is where you found one.
Chico is where we found one. So we drive up there, and then they'll do our hogs for us, and then they'll cut and wrap it all to our specifications, and then I'll do other cuts for restaurants, and then I can bring back whole bellies because some people like to cure their own meats.
Oh, make your own bacon. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's awesome.
Uh-huh. Okay, you are listening to Mouthful. Our first guest tonight is Dan Bagley of Clark Summit Farm. We'll be right back.
Up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. This Colonel Sanders job is getting me down. A crazy chicken chasing me all over town. Psycho chicken.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Smells really good. Smelling potatoes, and these potatoes already, they have a story. David Little. We heard about David Little out at Seaweed Cafe last week, and he's growing potatoes, and it turns out he's growing them on your farm.
Yeah. We had a field that we haven't used in a while, and we decided David's Little is a friend of ours, so I offered him 3 acres to come out and roll a till and grow his potatoes. And we have a nice southern slope, and it's on a hill, so it drains really well. So he came in and planted potatoes early in the springs before he went to a few places in Fallon Road that he plants potatoes too.
Where?
On Fallon Road.
Oh, Fallon Road, yes.
And so we offered him our land to plow under and plant his potatoes in and then put a cover crop in. And
now, does he sell them, or do you? How does that part work?
No, David sells his potatoes at the Ferry Plaza and Marin Civic Center Farmers Market, and he supplies me with potatoes.
He does. Okay, now then, you know.
Yeah,
David Little, the mysterious David Little. He is at Clark Summit Farm. I want to bring Javier. Javier, I'm going to bring you into the conversation because you also were willing to come onto Mouthful at the last minute. Thank you very much. And Bodega Goat Cheese.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
And tell me now, your farm or your dairy, you're located in Lake County now, right?
Yeah, we're off Highway 20 in Scotts Valley Road. Up near Lakeport.
How long have you been there?
5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. And when did you start Bodega Goat Cheese?
In 1984. Yeah, we were in Berkeley, and we had the goats in Martinez. So we were commuting to Martinez to make cheese every day.
And did you call it? What was it called then?
It was called Mendocino goat cheese because the goats came from Mendocino.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then what year did you move over to Bodega?
We decided to buy a piece of land, and we were looking around the Bay Area, but it was too close to the city, so we decided to come up north, you know, to Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. That's when we bought Bodega.
Yeah, and you were in Bodega for quite a number of years, right?
Almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how would you describe the style of goat cheese that you make?
It's a South American style. We specialize in fresh cheeses, and we make a few aged cheeses too, but the fresh cheeses are all South American style. The aged cheeses are a Spanish style. We make a manchego and a shepherd cheese that are aged for about 6 months each.
Mm-hmm. And how would you, tell us a little bit about the South American cheeses. Just, I think that's one region. We don't really see cheeses from that area much. Maybe Argentina a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think we're much more familiar around here with European cheeses.
Yeah, that's right. The Peruvian cheeses that we make, the Peruvian style cheeses, is actually more like a fresh feta. It's a feta that we don't put in brine. It's like a baby feta. So as soon as we make it, it's ready to sell. And the freshness of the cheese is because we use the same day's milk to make it. You know, we make it in the morning and it's ready to sell the next day. The other one that we make that is Peruvian style too is a cream cheese. It's more like a fromage blanc, but it's the same thing. We use the same day's milk, and we use a yogurt culture to flavor the cheese, and it's made the old-fashioned way where you hang it in bags and, you know, then you mix it with sea salt, and that's it.
That's it, yeah. I love that style. Mm-hmm. I like making it, and I also think it tastes really good. You also have one other product there, and I see that it looks like you might have brought it.
Oh, yes. That's another Peruvian recipe. It's called natilla, and it's a combination of goat's milk, molasses, and brown sugar. It's like a caramel. And usually the way they serve it in Peru is with apples or with strawberries, anything that is a little tart. And it's a very, very good combination with fruit.
And how do you make – you simmer it. You mix the molasses and brown sugar with the milk and then boil it down. Is that
boil
right?
It down, yeah. It takes about 3 hours to make. You have to cook it down, you know, at low flame.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. There's something about it. And, you know, I don't have a big, huge – sweet tooth, but there's something about that stuff that is absolutely irresistible.
Oh yes, once you start eating that, you can't stop.
Yeah, it's really good. It's the sort of thing that's when you need like a timed lock on your refrigerator so that you don't get up at 3 a.m. and find yourself with a finger full of it. Where can people get your cheeses?
We're mostly in farmers markets. We do this Saturday farmers market at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. We do the Sebastopol Farmers Market every Sunday. And up north, we do Mendocino on Fridays, Fort Bragg on Wednesdays, Kelseyville on Saturdays, and Willits on Thursdays.
You spend a lot of time driving.
Yeah, but it's between me and my brother, so we kind of split the markets.
Oh, okay. That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Okay. You are listening to Mouthful on KRCB. You are listening to Mouthful in the studio with me. Mm-mm-mm. Pork smells really good, and so do the potatoes. One of the things I love about really well-grown potatoes, they have that wonderfully earthy aroma.
That's because the potatoes are farmed, dry farmed.
Dry farmed. So it intensifies them.
So what it does, it takes all the iron and nutritional value out of the soil and it goes straight into the potato. And that's why they have so much flavor and they're so rich. They're really dense, heavy, and loaded with flavor.
Yeah, and I think potatoes are one of those foods that people think, oh, you know, potato's a potato. I can just buy any potatoes because they all taste the same. And it's so...
wrong.
Not, yeah, exactly. It's so wrong. So that's Dan Bagley of Clark Summit Farm, and also in the studio with us, Javier Salmon. And it's you and your brother. So it's Javier and Danielle Salmon doing Bodega Goat Cheese.
That's right.
And you brought several of the cheeses with you. This one is crema with basil? Is
that yeah, right? And we grow our own herbs at the farm. It's all organic herbs, you know, in the cheese.
Now, did you, you are from Peru, right?
Yeah, I was born in Peru.
Was your family in, was it a dairy family, a cheese-making family?
Yeah, my father, when we were kids, he had a cheese factory, so that's where we learned how to make cheese with my father and my brothers and everybody.
Did you know when you came here, did you have making cheese as a goal?
Yeah, it was always in the back of my head that I was going to go back to the land and cheese making. And it just took a little time to put it all together, but we finally did it. Yeah, it was a rough start at the beginning.
What was it that made it difficult? Was it the production or was it the market? Because I know things in 1984, there wasn't anywhere near the focus on artisan foods that there is now.
That's right. That was one of the problems. We were trying to sell it at farmers markets, and it was very little demand for the product. So we did sell a lot to restaurants, stores at the time, and we did only one farmer market a week. And then the whole tide changed, you know, in the 90s when there was much more demand for the goat cheese. And that was why we decided to go straight to the farmer's market and go, you know, sell the product from the producer to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. And you do some retail.
Just a little bit, not too much.
Yeah, because I know every now and then I see you. I think I see you in Andy's.
Yeah,
maybe.
No,
Andy's or Fiesta.
Fiesta Market.
Okay.
Yeah,
Fiesta. Mm-hmm. That's where it is. So, should we taste something?
Oh, please. I brought you.
Okay, you tell me which one we should taste first.
This is the plain from Fromage Blanc that we brought here, which is the base for the other two, basil and serrano chilies.
Okay, when you make the Fromage Blanc, what goes into it? You have the milk.
It's fresh milk from the same day. We add a yogurt culture, a tiny amount of microbial rennet, and sea salt.
Yeah,
and
you can tell the salt. The salt just brings it all.
Yeah.
It really makes the flavors blossom.
Mm-hmm. And then we make it, like I said, the old-fashioned way where you hang it, and then we don't touch those bags of cheese until the time or you mix it with the salt, and that's you put it in the containers, and it's ready to go.
And about how long does it take for it to drain?
We leave it in the bags for 24 hours, more or less. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the ones with herbs, we just mix the herbs with the curd at the time we're mixing the salt in.
I should pass this around. This is very good. It's really good.
Thank you. Very delicious.
Thank you very much.
And then you one has basil. What's the other one?
The other one is with serrano chilies and cilantro. It's a really nice combination.
Yes, and you know what? I'm going to ask you to pass me that knife.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as you say serranos and cilantro.
Yeah, and I roast the serranos before I put them in the cheese, so it has a kind of a smoky flavor. It's a little spicy, so be careful.
Okay, let's see if I can still speak after I do this.
The cheese is very flavorful, a lot of robust. You can really taste the butter fat.
And it definitely has
really
a kick.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely has a kick, a good kick.
Oh, yeah.
I have not tried. I usually stop by your stand and try a little something at the market. But this is really not wimpy.
Uh-huh.
It's really very good.
It goes very well with potatoes.
Oh, well, pass that back here, Dan. Gotta get a.
I'm going to have to try that myself.
Good with potatoes. There's an idea. And do you find that one or the other is more popular? Is there a preference?
The crema with the herbs are really good sellers. You know, they they move a lot at the farmer's market. And the other one that we sell a lot is the Fresco, which is like a fresh feta.
That's the one I tried today. I love that cheese. Mm-hmm.
That's very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we make in the week, we sell it all out. It's uh-huh. all gone.
How many goats do you have?
We're milking right now 76 goats. Mm-hmm. And they're getting pregnant as we talk right now. We put the boys
those
in.
Those goats.
we put now the boys in last week. So
are they milked by hand or by machine?
We have machines, but we finish by hand so that we check the others every time we milk. And right now the production of milk is slowing down because they're pregnant, mm-hmm. and the gestation period is about 5 months. So by the end of December, we dry all the animals.
So you'll have no cheese for a little while?
Yeah, we stop making cheese for the month of January and February. Uh-huh. Start back in March again.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the babies are born, do you leave them with the moms for a while, or do you
We leave them with the mama for a month or so,
uh-huh.
and the babies start chewing on the others, and the mamas start kicking them out mm-hmm. after a month. And that's when we separate it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the females, I assume you keep them to put them into milk production?
Yeah, we keep about 30 females a year, and it's to renew the herd every year. We put a few more yearlings in mm-hmm. into the milk line.
And then what happens with the others?
The baby boys, we sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the girls, too. We sell them to a lot of farmers around the area who want to keep goats for clearing land.
Uh-huh.
And there's now a big business, with bringing goats to different places and different national parks and places like
that. Yeah, just like it's being done with sheep as well to graze mm-hmm. fire hazard.
Exactly.
Yeah, they eat the grasses and weeds down. Goats are really good because they eat blackberries, and sheep won't eat blackberries as other weeds.
Bring them over to my house. I got some blackberries. Definite need of being eaten. They're the most tenacious. I think they're when everything else on the planet is gone, there will be blackberry bushes and cockroaches.
Yeah.
That's what's nice about, our pigs. They're eating tons of blackberries right now.
Oh, wow.
Because since we're so close to the coast, our blackberries mm-hmm. stay for a long time. They don't shrivel up quite as fast. And we have, our chickens and our guinea hens. They're all
free range. Oh, you have guinea hens as well?
Yeah, we bought some guinea hens to help be our watchdogs because they're really noisy. And they love eating bugs. Because by the coast, you have a lot of ticks and things like that. And they're great foragers. They eat all the ticks and out of the grasses. And they watch the owls, and they make a lot of noise and help protect the chickens at night.
Oh, really? I hadn't known. How big are they, guinea hens?
They're about the same size of a Rhode Island Red.
Okay. So they're pretty...
They're pretty big.
They're pretty big.
They have, kind of purplish heads. And they have these little jaws... hang down, and their feathers are black and white with mm-hmm. dots. And they're a French bird. They're really nice.
Uh-huh.
We enjoy having them around our farm, and our customers that come, they pick up stuff. They see the guineas running around and the chickens and stuff. And
I didn't realize they were aggressive and active in that way. That's
they're really noisy, not really aggressive.
Yeah.
But they noisy, let you know yeah. when someone comes
yeah.
around. Yeah.
They're talking to you.
They're talking to us.
Yeah. Now, that brings something up. You say they use them as watchdogs, watch animals. What are some of the challenges on you as well, Javier? You've got a couple of things happening. One is habitat encroachment. We hear a lot about mountain lions and just animals. And I see deer in my yard all the time now. And when I first moved to where I am, about a mile and a half from downtown Sebastopol, and when I first moved there were never deer near me. So with habitat disappearing, are you finding certain challenges in being a rancher where you are and where you are in Lake County?
Yeah, well, where we are, we have a lot of coyotes and mountain lions because we're surrounded by BLM land. And it's
by which?
Bureau Land of Management. And there's a lot of coyotes that you can hear them every night. And so we have those big Great Pyrenees taking care of the goats, those big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
One of them
beautiful
is,
dogs.
One of them is 200 pounds, and the other one is 170. So they're huge.
Yes. Predator protection dogs are a must for most farmers.
Mm-hmm. And are they effective?
For the most part, yes. Mm-hmm. The coyotes are really smart because they'll lure your dogs over to one direction and then another pack of them will come from behind and attack. Like, they attack our chickens. So all of our laying hens and stuff, we build houses with doors on them. Mm-hmm. So at nighttime, all our chickens actually go in and we lock the chickens up at night.
Mm-hmm. So, and coyotes hunt at night, right?
And coyotes hunt at night. Mm-hmm. But we have bobcats and foxes that are coming during the middle of the day and taking our chickens. And people always ask, why does your chicken cost so much? I'm like, well, because we have predators eating our animals. They're eating very expensive organic grain. And this is what it costs. It's worth it when you really taste it. We do all heritage animals, so we don't do any industrial breeds. We're doing a chicken from like the 30s.
What are the breeds?
It's called a Freedom Ranger and a Red Broiler. Next year, we're just going to do Red Broilers. Because I like the flavor a little bit better. Mm-hmm. The skins is a little thicker and the fat's really yellow. And it takes 13 to 14 weeks to raise these birds. So they actually build up bone marrow and stuff inside. And it makes excellent soup stock.
Stock, yeah.
And then your normal birds are Cornish crosses. And from like birth to slaughter, those are done in 21 days. And a lot of people don't realize
21
that.
Days, that's really not very long at all.
Yeah, it's not very long for a bird. And because they changed them just to sit in front of the feed thing and eat and eat and eat. And most of them have like sparrow legs. Their legs are all crippled in. They don't walk very far. They grow so fast that they barely grow any feathers.
Really?
And yeah, sometime.
I knew it was bad, but I didn't know they didn't grow many feathers. That's really sad.
Yeah, it's real sad. Their breast and their back hardly has any feathers because they grow so fast.
Oh, the feathers can't keep up with
with the growth of their skin. And they have like little wing feathers.
Uh-huh. And one of the things you really notice, and I noticed this when I tasted my very first Rocky long, long time ago when it was Bart Eamon, they were barely in any stores. There's a distinct, you see the muscles. The muscles are distinct and separate in the chicken. And there's much more of a texture. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can see how, like, the double-breasted, you can actually see how it's double-breasted when you pull apart. And it's kind of, when you cook it, you can see the long strings of meat you can peel off.
Mm-hmm. And like in a thigh, like you see the separate muscles of the thigh. And there's a firmer texture that is at the same time more tender than a standard, if that makes any sense at all. Firmer but more tender, really, it's true, than commercial birds. And I think once you've eaten the kind of chicken that you're talking about, you really can't and shouldn't go back.
It's really hard to go back. Yeah.
What was I going to ask you? I forget what I was going to say. Never mind. do you sell any of your of the goats for cabrito?
Yeah, we have a couple of restaurants that buy the baby goats for cabrito. One is Santi out of
Taverna Santi, yes.
And then sometimes I sell it to the bistro too in Sebastopol. BL Bistro?
K&L Bistro.
Oh, yeah.
K&L Bistro. I haven't had had cabrito there. That's good to know. And one of the things, I was talking with Brock Fulmer of Black Sheep Farm, and he had some really interesting things to say about the nutritional breakdown of cabrito, mm-hmm. in that the first of all, goats eat more things than sheep do, so the goat's milk is really nutritious. It's a lot more iron, a lot more minerals, and so the resulting, and plus they produce more milk than sheep do. And I think that there's still, you know, there's sort of a bias against cabrito, just like there's a bias, you can freak a lot of people out by, you know, talking about eating rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
For example, and both of those things are really efficient forms of protein, I think.
Yeah, and the meat is very lean. It's very similar to venison, in a little gamey, you know, but mm-hmm. it tastes very delicious when you cook it right. There's another way to make jerky too out of the goat meat, and that's very nutritious and healthy.
How do you do that?
By cutting little strips of the meat and hanging it with salt and lime juice. And then when you go to work, just put a little bit of jerky in your pocket and go to work.
And you hang it, do you hang it outside? Where do you hang it?
Inside of the barn.
Inside the barn. Yeah. For how long do you have to hang it?
For about a month or so.
Oh, really? That long?
Yeah.
That reminds me of this little restaurant in Todos Santos, Baja California, before there were any trailer park, before there were any Americans there. I was the only one. I was with a friend from Mexico. And we had a little house, and we would walk down to the same restaurant every morning, had a dirt floor and chickens running around. And out on the clothesline in the back was all this meat hung up with clothespins. And if you ordered machaca, sometimes she would go out, the waitress would go out, or the cook would go out and get a piece of the meat off the clothesline. And it was very concentrated, very dry. And I don't know how they kept the wolves away in the middle of the night, but somehow they did. Well, you are listening. You know what it is. It's Mouthful on KRCB.
They took old Danny Boy for a ride from the arms of his bride-to-be. Threw him into the murky waters by the Dog Biscuit Factory. Dry the tears and stifle the cheers as he sinks just like a stone. Footprints set in sentimental cement now burning down his bones. Lest we forget, he lies the great unknown. My Delilah. Who's the butcher that you harbor? Take the rich man to the cleaner.
It's just so good. I'm looking at the Nutella. Can I take a taste?
Oh, please.
You know, it's not necessarily time for dessert, but I can't resist. Okay. Goat cheese, molasses, and brown sugar.
Goat's milk.
Goat's milk. I meant goat's milk, not goat's cheese. I knew that. It's just so, it's dizzyingly good. Bacon, ham.
Bacon and ham.
Smoked shanks, smoked trotters.
Yes, a lot of people are starting to ask me for fresh pig feet and shanks because they can't find them anywhere.
Yeah, hard to find.
And pig skin. So now that I have all my meat brought back to me, I can have it smoked at a local place here in town.
This is at Angelo's and Petaluma's doing
Petaluma.
It. Yeah. Now, but you're not smoking the pig skin. Are you smoking the skin? Okay.
I actually do both. Skin. I have smoked meats and I have fresh meats. I have fresh ham. Uh-huh. And I have smoked ham and.
Uh-huh. And is Angelo doing your bacon as well?
Yes, he's doing my bacon, and well, he's doing all my smoking.
All the smoked, okay. And
then I have, like, some breakfast sausage, which he makes for me. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
You're not getting away from the bacon yet. Do you sell it sliced or unsliced?
Both. I have chunks of it, and then I have some of it sliced.
Okay. And it's $10.25 a pound. Your prices look like they range for the pork. It looks like it's ranging from about $2.50 a pound up to about $10.75 a pound.
Yes,
in that range.
That's in the ballpark. Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned your beef. You have sirloins. Okay, you've got a couple things on here. Is your beef seasonal?
Yeah, our beef, we harvest at the height of the grasses, which is like in from like July through October and maybe the 1st of November, because every 3 months beef changes flavors as the season changes. And all of our beef are 100% grass-fed. And we figured out we raise our animals for 2.5 to 3 years old. So where we live in Tamales, it's very hilly, so they get a lot of exercise. So the meat really marbles really nicely. And then we like to hang our beef for 3 weeks, so it ages and brings out a lot more flavor into the meat.
Yeah, concentrates. I mean, one of the things that's happening during hanging is moisture is evaporating, right?
Yeah, moisture is evaporating, and it's intensifying the flavor of the meat.
And is it also going through that sort of process where it's breaking it down so it becomes more tender?
Yes, it makes it very tender. Yeah. Aging everything is what makes meat tender. Mm-hmm. You have to age it to help break down the cell molecules, which makes the meat tender. Yeah.
Now, some people, and these are chefs, some chefs have had a problem with grass-fed beef because they think that it tastes watery. And I've been talking to a couple different producers and have gotten various answers, one being that it's not aged, and another one being that it's the type of food that they're getting. So are you finding that with your beef, or are you finding that with aging, there's not that watery quality?
Well, a lot of things makes the beef taste different. Mm-hmm. Because if you're growing your beef on the coastal, like where we have a very fog bank, mm-hmm. and the grasses stay green and they stay really rich with salt and high in like omega-3s from, you know, the grasses, mm-hmm. is what makes the omega-3s in beef. So it flavors it a little differently than like if you grew it in Lake County or in Napa or Sonoma, the grasses turn brown at the end of May, beginning of June. So they have to harvest their beef a lot earlier than we do.
So is it the earlier harvested beef that still has that sort of
more
watery?
And a lot of places they irrigate. So when they're irrigating and their soils are malnourished because the beef is on there and they're spraying commercial fertilizers or other types. You know, a lot of times they use dairy ponds and they take the dairy manure, they have manure ponds, uh-huh. and they spread that throughout their fields. And that only adds nitrogen, and it burns the grasses and stuff. So it actually changes the flavor of the grasses, I think. And that makes their beef taste different. So each place that you buy beef, the meat will taste different, mm-hmm. because the grasses are different.
Uh-huh. And then, as you said,
and then
also
then
the time of year.
The time of year is very important. That's why a lot of our beef is seasonal. Mm-hmm. And we pick the best times of the year to harvest our animal to have the best quality that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Have you found, do you cook a lot?
Yes,
I love
cooking.
Do you make this pork chop? This pork chop I have to do. Pork chop and potatoes with capers. It's really good. It's nice.
Actually, my wife made it last night because it was my turn to go out and do the evening chores and lock the chickens up. We just fried it in a, mm-hmm. or she fried it mm-hmm. in a cast iron skillet, mm-hmm. with some capers, mm-hmm. and salt and pepper. That's it.
Are you finding that you need to sort of adjust your cooking techniques to work with the type of meat you produce for the best results? I find that at home, that there's really a learning curve.
Yeah, when you start raising all your animals on pasture and stuff, mm-hmm. The cells change, so you don't have to use as hot as heat and you don't have to cook it as long.
Yeah, it cooks more quickly.
It cooks a
lot more quickly.
And it has a lot more flavors, which is nice. There's a couple of cookbooks out there that are great. The Grass-Fed Farmer, mm-hmm. has a cookbook. Usually if people buy a whole beef from us or something, I give them a cookbook, or I just ordered some more. So I'm trying to educate people as well as when they're coming to the farmer's market, mm-hmm. and they're interested. Hey, I want to get some grass-fed beef, but I really don't know how to cook it, mm-hmm. or this. I give them this book, and it's an awesome book. It shows how to do goat, lamb, beef, pork. It has lots of different recipes in there.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote it?
Actually,
it's okay.
I forget the
That's
lady's
okay.
name, but
we'll
she's
find out
actually
and we'll let you
know. A doctorate, and she's from the East Coast. I just can't remember her name off
it's
the top
okay.
of my head.
Well, we will find out. You can be sure. In fact, Lawrence is working on it as we speak. Do you have a favorite of all the stuff you do? Is there anything that is like a real personal favorite?
I'm kind of attached to all my chickens.
Yeah? I thought you were going to say that.
They have great personalities. When they see us coming, they all come running at us, and they walk around our feet, and they feel really safe. And we have dogs that stay with our chickens all the time.
What breed?
We have an Anatolian Shepherd.
Uh-huh.
And we have two Labradors, and we have a Blue Heeler Fox Terrier. And we kind of move them around with our chickens. Our meat chickens, our red broilers, don't go in cages. They're outside, so they're really acceptable to predators. So we bring our dogs down, and they stay in the pens with the chickens, mm-hmm. 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And
how do you like to cook the eggs?
I like poached eggs and eggs easy over.
Uh-huh. Poached eggs. I'm with you on pie. I love poached eggs.
Yeah. It brings out all the flavor. You mm-hmm. can really taste the eggs. And,
yeah. Poached eggs for dinner.
That sounds good.
Yeah, and eggs over easy, too.
I make great frittatas. We go out to the garden, and we take our basil and tomatoes. Well, tomatoes we can't grow because we're on the coast. But yeah. I end up buying tomatoes from a neighbor, and then we make frittatas, and they come out really good.
And, Javier, what about you? Is there a favorite way you like to enjoy your cheese?
Oh, we eat it every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We like to eat the fromage blanc with baguette and tomatoes, you know, from the garden, which is a very nice combination. And the one with the basil is really good with fish. We put it on top of salmon when we barbecue salmon. The fresco is delicious with potatoes and corn. That's the way they serve it in South America, in mm-hmm. Peru. It's a
potatoes and corn.
Yeah.
Sounds
in Cusco, when you go to the Cusco area in southern Peru, they serve it to you with on the husk of the corn. They boil the corn, and then they put a chunk of queso fresco right in between the husk of the corn. This is really delicious because it kind of melts in mm-hmm. the corn.
Sounds excellent. Okay, well, I want to talk again about how people can get start with you, Javier. How do people get your products?
The best bet is farmers market. A few stores like Oliver's in Santa Rosa, they carry the cheese. Fiesta Market in Sebastopol.
So Pacific, would that be Pacific then as
Pacific.
Well in both Rohnert Park and Santa Rosa?
That's right. And then farmers market Sebastopol and the Ferry Building in San Francisco. Okay.
And then you also said Willits, Fort Bragg,
Kelseyville, and Mendocino.
Tell us a little. We have enough time. Tell us about the Kelseyville farmers market.
Oh, it's a very cute market. It's at the Still Lane Winery and in front of the winery, and it's every Saturday from 9 in the morning till midday, and. All the people from that live around the lake and all the different cities around the lake, they come to the market because it's the only one in Lake County.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very busy market for being such a small market.
About how many vendors are there?
There must be about 30 vendors there.
That's pretty big for that. 30 vendors?
It's
for
not
there,
too
I
bad,
think
yeah.
That's pretty good. I mean, I know for a while the Cloverdale market was... When it first started, it was really tiny.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really tiny. So
but I heard they're doing better in Cloverdale. The farmers market is doing really good.
Yeah, it moved to a new location. It started up another time.
Oh.
And I hear a lot of great things about it now.
Oh,
and there was
great.
For a while. I don't know if it's still operating. But if you drive from Nicasio, you're going from Nicasio to Fairfax, you pass the San Geronimo Farmers Market. It was like 3 or 4 vendors.
Yeah.
And it's so cute.
Yeah.
It's adorable. Okay, and... Yeah. It's Clark Summit Farm, and you mentioned people stopping by. So I assume that you also take special orders from people.
Yeah, we do special orders. We encourage our customers to come out to our farm. We do a farm tour the second Saturday of every month, which is next coming Saturday. We ask people to email us or call us so we can put a group of people together.
Uh-huh.
And then we take them on a farm tour, and we explain how we raise our animals, and they can see for themselves. Which not very many farms will actually let customers come and walk and
mm-hmm.
see what they're doing. And we really try to educate all our consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to educate Marin County and Sonoma County mm-hmm. People to really investigate where their food comes from and visit your farmer and see how they raise their goats and, you know, make sure they're treating their animals humanely and everything. 'Cause people forgot where their food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to stow. And the farmer's market has helped tremendously.
And you're at the Sebastopol people. Farmer's Market.
The Santa Rosa and the Marin mm-hmm. on Thursdays. Buy Right in San Francisco carries our products. And Good Earth in Fairfax is just starting to carry our eggs.
The Good Earth. Okay, and people can find you by going to ClarkSummitFarm.com?
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. Or they could just Google us, and you can see all sorts of articles that magazines and
yeah, there's
other
a big article here.
Wrote
big
about
piece
us.
From the September 5th issue of the
Chronicle.
San Francisco Chronicle. Nice drawing of a chicken and an egg. And by the way, the name of that cookbook, we think, is The Grass-Fed Gourmet Cookbook by Shannon Hayes. Sound familiar?
Yes, that's...
I told you, Lauren says you're whiz on the computer. And on that note, Javier Salmon of Bodega Goat Cheese and Dan Bagley of Clark Summit Farm, thank you so much, and thank you for bringing all these really yummy things.
Thank you for inviting us. Yeah.
And have a great week. Treat each other well, and meet me back here next Sunday for another episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with DVD audio, satellite radio, and MP3 capability. Learn more at acura.com.